Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 4. Gajendra returns to the spiritual world. I'm just going to read the translation for text 2, and we'll read text 3. There was a beating of kettle drums in the heavenly planets. The inhabitants of Gandharva Loka began to dance and sing, while the great sages and the inhabitants of Jarna Loka and Siddha Loka offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Purushottama. Text number 3. Yoso griha savai sadhya paramashaya rupadrik mukto devala sapena uhur gandharva satamaha. Ya hihu. It's almost like hoo-hoo. Aso that. Graha became a crocodile. Sa hi vai indeed. Sadhya immediately. Parama, very nice. Ascharya, wonderful. Rupa Drik, possessing the form of his original Gandharva position. Mukta was delivered. Devala Shapena. By the cursing of Devala, Rishi, Hoo-hoo, whose name was formerly Hoo-hoo, Gandharva Satama, the best of the Gandharva Loka, Pranamya, offering his obeisances, Shirasa, by the head, Adisham, unto the Supreme Master, Udma Shlokam, who is worshipped by the choicest verses, Avyayam, who is the Supreme Eternal, Agayata, he began to chant, Yashadama, the glories of the Lord, Kirtanya Guna Sadkatam, whose transcendental pastimes and qualities are glorious. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The best of the Gandharvas, King Hoo-hoo, having been cursed by Devala Muni, had become a crocodile. Now, having been delivered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he assumed a very beautiful form as a Gandharva. Understanding by whose mercy this had happened, he immediately offered his respectful obeisances with his head and began chanting prayers just suitable for the Transcendental Lord, the Supreme Eternal, who is worshipped by the choicest verses. Purport. The story of how the Gandharva had become a crocodile will be described later. The curse by which the Gandharva took this position was actually a blessing, not a curse. One should not be displeased when a saintly person curses someone, for his curse indirectly is a blessing. The Gandharva had the mentality of an inhabitant of the celestial planetary system, and for him to become an associate of the Supreme Lord would have taken millions of long years. However, because he was cursed by Devala Rishi, he became a crocodile, and in only one lifetime was fortunate enough to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. And he was promoted to the spiritual world to become one of the Lord's associates. Similarly, Gajendra was also delivered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he was freed from the curse of Agastya Muni. Text 5. Having been favored by the causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and having regained his original form, King Huhu circumambulated the Lord and offered his obeisances. Then in the presence of all the demigods, headed by Brahma, he returned to Gandharva Loka. He had been freed of all sinful reactions. Because Gajendra, king of the elephants, had been touched directly by the hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was immediately freed of all material ignorance and bondage. Thus he received the salvation of Swarupya Mukti, in which he achieved the same bodily features as the Lord, being dressed in yellow garments and possessing four hands. Purport. If one is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead by having his gross body touched by the Lord, his body turns into a spiritual body, and he can go back home to Godhead. Gajendra assumed a spiritual body when his body was touched by the Lord. Similarly, Dhruva Maharaj assumed his spiritual body in this way. Archana Padati, daily worship of the deity, provides an opportunity to touch the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus it enables one to be fortunate enough to get a spiritual body and go back to Godhead. Not only by touching the body of the Supreme Lord, but by simply by hearing about his pastimes, chanting his glories, touching his feet, and offering worship. In other words, by serving the Lord, somehow or another, one is purified of material contamination. This is the result of touching the Supreme Lord. One who is a pure devotee, anya bilasita shunyam, who acts according to the shastra and the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, certainly becomes purified. Like a Gajendra, he assumes a spiritual body, returns home back to Godhead. So it sounds like all the Pujaris are going to go back to Godhead. Or if anyone can climb up to go onto the altar and touch Krishna, then he gets a spiritual body. On the other hand, Prabhupada says, quotes the verse, Anya bilasita shunyam jnana karma iravrita, that one has to become purified in order to return home back to Godhead. Both are necessary. In other words, one becomes purified by becoming conscious of Krishna. But one can actually even be directly in contact with Krishna and be unconscious of who he actually is. We have the example of Kamsa. He was certainly directly in contact with Krishna. Krishna was straddling his body. Krishna was on top of him, beating him with his own lotus hands. And yet Kamsa did not go back to Godhead immediately, because he didn't realize that Krishna, who he was being beaten by. Similarly, it took Haranyakashipu and Haranyaksha some births before they became eligible to get free from the curse and go back to the spiritual world, because they didn't recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even Agastura, who was directly in contact with Krishna, was directly in contact with him because he had taken Krishna as prasad. Sometimes we eat prasadam, and Krishna enters into us in the form of prasadam. But Agasura was even more fortunate because Krishna himself entered into his body in the form of prasad, mahaprasad. And yet Agasura, after leaving the body, initially merged into the body of Krishna. Therefore, everything depends upon faith. When we use the word faith, generally people think believing in something that you have no experience of. But the definition of faith in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is different. Shraddha, Shabde, Vishvasakahe, Sudrida, Nishchai, Krishna Bhakti, Kaile, Sarvakarma, Kritahai. That firm faith, Dhrita faith, means faith in something which is sublime. That faith in something we may not have complete experience of, but we have enough experience of that we believe in it. Shraddha Shabde Vishvasa Kahe. So it is said, Vishvasa, faith means something, firm faith. Srida Nishchai, completely fixed with vow, determination. Krishna Kaile Sarva Karma Kritahai. Faith that if I simply serve Krishna, then everything else will follow. And of course, we have the famous verse, which we heard a couple of days ago, Yata Turamula, Nishechinena Triptyanti Tatskana Bujo Pushaka, Pranaharascha Yatendriyanam Tataiva Sarahanam Atutecha. That if you water the root of the tree, then the water will go to all the leaves and branches. And if you supply food to the stomach, then naturally all the different parts of the body are served. Similarly, if one serves a chuta, then naturally all living entities will be satisfied, including the demigods. Now, we have examples of that in our books, how Durvasa Muni went to visit the Pandavas in the forest during their exile, because Duryodhana wanted that Durvasa Muni curse them. So he told Durvasa Muni, I heard there's a good restaurant in the forest. And Draupadi's the head cook. She feeds all the sages who go there. It's a free meal. We suggest you go there at lunchtime. So Durvasa Muni, with his 50,000 followers or so, decided to take lunch with Draupadi and the Pandavas in the forest, a picnic. It is said that Durvasa Muni himself had given Draupadi a plate, and the plate would provide meals to everyone until Draupadi took her meal. And Dronacharya, knowing well when lunchtime was over, told Durvasa Muni to go just after lunch. All the sages that were accompanying the Pandavas in the forest were fed. Draupadi fed the Pandavas and took her meal. And now Durvasa Muni showed up with his 50,000 followers asking, you know, we heard there's a good lunch here. Can we sit down and eat? We're hungry. So Yudhisthira Maharaj, knowing that Durvasa Muni is Ashutosha, an expansion of Lord Shiva, could be easily pleased, and he'd give all kinds of blessings, and if he was displeased, he'd curse. So generally speaking, when one is hungry and he doesn't eat, he gets angry. So knowing that Durvasa Muni would get angry if he said, my dear sir, sorry, you're 15 minutes late, come back tomorrow. So, on the other hand, King Yudhisthira said, no problem, you know. We'll have a nice hot meal prepared for you. Samosas, gulab jamuns, puris, halva. Just come back after taking your bath in the Ganges. So Durvasa Muni was 50,000 followers, went to take bath in the Ganges. And Draupadi was quite disturbed because there was no way she was going to feed anyone. Even it would take too long to even pick leaves off the tree to feed 50,000 sages with leaves. Which is, obviously you don't serve cold leaves. You would have to heat them up at least. That would take too long. They didn't know what to do, but Krishna, being omniscient, knew, understood their problem, and appeared on the scene and asked if there was anything to eat. So Draupadi began to cry. Now we're going to be cursed by the sages and by Durvasa Muni, and now Krishna is coming. We can't feed him either. Krishna said, no, don't worry about it. Just see if there's anything left in the pot. So they found a little morsel of sabji, Krishna ate it, and it said the whole universe became satisfied. Now, ordinarily, we offer some prasadam to some bhoga to the deities. The deities eat it, and we're still not satisfied, nor is the whole universe. So how did Krishna get a little bit of subji, and the whole universe became satisfied? Because it depends upon the offering. Who's offering it? If we have faith that Krishna is God, and that if we serve him, everyone's going to be served automatically, there's going to be a different reaction. And we think, well, here's a statue, and if we feed it, then at least we get something to eat too. In other words, the universe reciprocates with us, not only according to our activities, but also according to our mentality, according to our understanding what's going to happen. If we think something's going to happen, it's more likely to happen than if we think it's impossible to happen. Just as that Brahmin, when he came to Gopal in Vrindavan and said, "My dear Gopal, you're a witness to the elderly Brahmin promising me his daughter in marriage, and you promised to act as a witness. Now the time has come that you must come as a witness and testify before the village people that this elderly Brahmin had offered his daughter to me in marriage." So Gopal said, "No, I don't think it's a good idea. I think what I should do is come in my four-handed form as Narayan, and I'll make testimony then." But the young Brahmin said, "No, that's not possible. I said that you yourself were going to come personally in your form of Gopal and give testimony. Because after all, that if you don't, you'll be responsible for not revealing the truth, and you'll get sinful reactions." So Gopal said, "Well, I should come and testify, but after all, I'm a statue. So how can a statue come and testify?" But the young Brahmin said, no, you're not a statue. You're directly the son of Mother Jasoda. That if you can talk, then you can also walk." So Gopal thought about it and said, "Well, that's pretty logical. Hard to get around that." "So I guess I will come. I'll walk behind you, and every day you offer me 1 kilo of rice, cooked rice, but don't turn back and look at me, because as soon as you see me, then I'll stop walking." So the Gopal, Didi Gopal, and the Brahmin walked all the way to Vidyanagara, and then the Brahmin couldn't hear the ankle bells anymore of Gopal. He turned around and saw Gopal smiling at him. And then all the village people came, including the elderly Brahmin and his son and everyone else. And Gopal acted as a witness, saying that the elderly Brahmin had promised his daughter in marriage to the younger Brahmin, and the whole thing was settled. Now we can believe in this, and we think, well, this is just a story. How is this possible? Some deity could have walked all the way. Do we actually think that the Panchatattva, if they wanted, they'd come and actually dance with us during the kirtan? That wouldn't be fair. It'd spoil our whole material life. We'd have no choice but to surrender. But we have information at the festival of Katori, I think it's called Katori. Kachari? What was that? Kachari, I guess. When Janava Devidasi was the head of the Sampradaya, they had a big festival, all the Vaishnavas. And it is said at that time, the deities came off the altar and they danced in their original forms with the participants in the festival. So we can think, oh, this is all just, fairy tales. Matter of fact, we'll think everything is a fairy tale. Brahma, as I said before, Brahma with four heads, sure. Our original father in the universe has four heads. He's a freak. Not only that, but he rides a peacock. Because he doesn't have to worry about refueling it all the time. And his son, Kartikeya, Brahma rides on a swan. And his son rides on a peacock, Kartikeya. He's the general of the universe, commander in chief. And when he goes to fight, he rides on a peacock. And the brother of Narada Muni and others, Bhrigu Muni, is Lord Shiva, and he has snakes in his hair. Actually, he has snakes around his neck, on his body, and he has the Ganges flowing from his hair, and his three eyes. And if you don't believe that, then you're a demon. Plus, there are other things. That there is a mountain, we're on Jambudweep, a little part of Jambudweep. And Jambudweep is we're on Vardvarsha, and Vardvarsha is many times bigger than what the material scientists claim that this planet Earth is. 27,000 yojana, it's like five times bigger, and Vardvarsha is only one of nine varshas on the Jambudweep. And in the middle of Jambudweep, there is Ilya Varsha surrounding Mount Meru, which is 100,000 yojanas high, approximately 1,200,000 kilometers high. And it's made out of solid gold. And if you could sell that mountain, you'd get rich. So people can't believe it. And matter of fact, the devotees sometimes can't believe it. Because we can't put it into our little brain that these things could even be possible. We read the Krishna book, King Ugrasena had 4 quadrillion personal bodyguards. So where do they fit? Of course, I think there is some commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti that he's talking about the spiritual world, not here. But the tutors in the Yadu dynasty, there were 34 million tutors for the children of the Yadu dynasty. So people who needed a job, they knew where to apply if they were a teacher. How many people live in Slovenia? Like 3 million or something? 2 million. So that means there are 17 times more teachers for the Yadu dynasty children than there are people live in Slovenia. So how is this all possible? How can we understand it? When some devotees went to Prabhupada one time and said, Prabhupada, no one could really read your books and accept them. They're just, you know, they're too fantastic. And then they were asking about how is it possible King Ugrasena could have had four quadrillion personal bodyguards, etc. So Prabhupada said, you don't have to accept that. Just don't believe it. That's all right. You don't have to accept it. But actually what happened is they couldn't really accept that because they didn't want to accept the four regular principles either. Ultimately, doubts help us so we can serve our senses. Because if this is all a fairy tale, then we might as well try to enjoy in the material world as much as we can. Why should we bother controlling our senses? The whole thing was made up anyhow. Therefore, we have to at least have faith that our body is changing because we have experience. If we can't have enough intelligence to accept that our bodies are changing, but we're not changing, that's probably the thing that we have most direct experience of, that will give us some faith at least in the words of the Krishna and the scriptures. Beyond faith in these so-called scientists and philosophers and sociologists, etc., who don't even mention these things. That the universe is going on with intelligence, and incredibly so, much beyond our imagination. If we try to perceive what we're capable of perceiving, then a little bit of faith will grow. And if we dwell on things too much, things which are beyond our imagination, beyond our immediate conception or perception, then we'll lose faith. But why do people dwell on such things? Why do they argue, you know, whether the jiva came from Mahavishnu or fell from the spiritual world? What do they spend their time fighting with each other? Because ultimately, they don't really want to have faith in the things that they can have faith in. They want to argue over the things that they can't really perceive and reach a conclusion under for other reasons other than actually performing devotional service. Now, knowing that Krishna and his form are none different, then that should lead us to the idea of serving Krishna with care and attention. Not that we like Vamsi Varana. Have a direct relation with Krishna in the form of Vatsalya Rasa, and therefore sometimes in Vamsi Varana thought that Krishna was, in the form of his deity was Nordi, he threatened to tie him up with a rope and throw him into the Ganges. Now, we go to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or any of the Panchatattva and say, you're being naughty today, I'm going to tie you up and throw you into the Ganges. Or into some river around here. That wouldn't go very well for our devotional service, because we don't believe that. We don't have that mood. It would be artificial. On the other hand, if we have some idea and some acceptance that Krishna and his deity are non-different, then what we can do is try and change our mood at least. We may not understand perfectly or perceive perfectly, but if we try to act on a certain level of devotional service, that is, at least we perform our service with care and attention, then Krishna can reciprocate with us. It doesn't cost anything else. It doesn't cost more to act, to serve with care and attention. Just like a neophyte devotee, he's supposed to act on the Madhyama Adhikari platform if he wants to make spiritual advancement. Acting on the Kanista Adhikari platform, praying to the deity for health or wealth or enlightenment or liberation will not want to help one spiritually advance. On the other hand, even if one is in distress or if his needs has desires or whatever else, if one tries at the same time to perform his service with care and attention as Krishna wants, namely worshipping Krishna by serving his instructions and at the same time cooperating with the devotees to spread the Sankirtan movement to the innocent and defeating the atheists, then the result will be that Krishna can reciprocate with us and give us experience on the transcendental platform. And as much experience as we get on the transcendental platform, then we can understand how there is a transcendental platform of experience, and next, how nice it is to be on the transcendental platform, and how unlimited it is, how it goes beyond our present conceptions, our limitations of experience. And that will encourage us to at least perform more activities on the Madhyama Adhikari platform, on the liberated platform, because that's what the Madhyama Adhikari platform means, beyond concern with the material gross and subtle bodies that we're presently in, concern for our spiritual existence, and concern with the reality of Krishna's existence. Then if we work on that platform, then faith will develop. Otherwise, Some faith will develop on the material platform. Therefore, Krishna says, akama sarva karma vai moksha kama udaradi. Because if we do act on the material platform following Krishna's instructions, then gradually we'll develop more faith in Krishna's instructions. But if we act on the material platform following Krishna's instructions, then we'll just get more and more faith in Krishna's instructions to act on how to act on the material platform to fulfill desires. But those desires being material will not advance us on the spiritual platform. They may give us faith in the existence of Krishna that someone out there can fulfill our material desires, but won't give us experience on the spiritual platform to fulfill spiritual desires. Therefore, it's advised that we tolerate the material senses and desires and try to act on the spiritual platform. And if we do that with faith, just like when we chant Hare Krishna, if we think it's the same old song, I've chanted so many times, and every time I chant it, I get the same result, which is practically nothing. Or maybe after a big kirtan, chanting for some hours, I feel a little peaceful. I feel good. I feel a little high. Same high as experience when I was doing chemicals before. But that kind of, you know, one should, that's good because at least one will have faith that there is something there to the holy name beyond what I generally think. But if one actually believes that when we say Hare Krishna, that Krishna and his divine energy, Srimati Radharani, are personally present, and that the only thing blocking me from them is my causeless unwillingness to accept that. We could say also, Krishna says, Naham Prakasha Sarvasha, that I'm never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. So who's the foolish or unintelligent? We can raise our hands. Otherwise, when we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna would manifest to us. So we must be included in the foolish and unintelligent. Because I'm covered by my eternal creative potency, Yogamaya. So Krishna is covered by his Yogamaya potency. So the deluded world knows me not, I'm unborn and inexhaustible. So we're part of the deluded world. But we can become undiluted if we accept, as much as we accept the words of Krishna and Bhagavad Gita and try to, with faith, serve them, follow them. At least that much faith that we follow them. At least try it out. Therefore, at the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that when you read Bhagavad Gita, at least you should agree with Arjuna when he accepts Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At least don't deny that he could be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At least have some, put it in abeyance, we could say, that he could be God, he may not be God, but I'm not going to doubt that it's impossible that he could be God. But I know if I follow his instructions, then I'll find out if he's God or not. So that's the idea of reading Bhagavad Gita. We may agree, we may not agree, we may understand, we may not understand. But if we can understand something and follow it with the idea he could be right, then Krishna can reciprocate with us. And if we don't have any faith, we probably won't hear anything, because we won't think it's very important, whatever Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, when they ask the devotees, how many times have you read Bhagavad Gita? And one of these ILS, ISKCON leadership sanghas, you know, the average was, you know, I forget, do you remember what the average was? I don't know, whatever, one or below one. At least I remember which was the book. Because they think, oh, this is really boring, you know. They're going to tell me I'm not this body. Krishna is God. I got to control my senses. I remember one of my first leaders I was under, because I remember, first thing I did was memorize the Bhagavad Gita. It took me 2 days to do it. Of course, that Bhagavad Gita was a little blue Bhagavad Gita. There's no Sanskrit, there was only verses. Easier. And I used to give class, practically since I joined, I was giving class. But I always, some of my favorite verses was, there are three gates leading to hell, lust, anger, and greed. Every sane person should become free from these gates because they lead to the degradation of the self. So my president of the temple would, after a while, he just got tired of my class. He said, can't you say something positive, you know? He didn't like to hear it. So there's certain things in Bhagavad Gita, you know, we can talk about. Even if we talk about Brahma flying around in a swan, it's a lot more attractive than three gates leading to hell. Yeah, open this gate. Ah, my God. Yeah, this guy who comes out and grabs you, drags you. Hot sand. But everything is there. Just like we see this picture of Prabhupada reading the fifth canto with a big smile on his face, looking at the hellish... You think, here's the author, translator of this book, and he seems to be happy reading about how people are suffering. What kind of saintly person is this? So we can't understand, because it's a question of faith, ultimately faith in Krishna, and what's going on here. Just one last thing. When Durvasa Muni threw the fiery Brahmastra, not Brahmastra, fiery demon at Ambarish Maharaj, for no good reason, Ambarish Maharaj, his eyes were full of tears, not due to fear that he was crying, oh, why me? I didn't do anything. No, he was in ecstasy because his mind was so concentrated on Krishna, tears of ecstasy were flowing from his eyes. He didn't think, oh my God, I didn't do anything. I just had some water. I was thirsty. You know, why is this man so angry at me? Krishna, where are you? Where is the justice in all this? No, he didn't. He saw everything in relation to Krishna, and he was in ecstasy, whatever was happening. As a matter of fact, his being put into danger caused him more ecstasy, because he saw all as Krishna's mercy. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Hare Krishna. There are varying opinions about sharing miraculous events in our life. So what is the proper... On one hand, we hear that one should not share one's elevated realizations. It seems to be there in the Jiva Dharma. On the other hand, it seems to be helpful for others. So what's the proper approach to discussing miraculous events in our lives?
Well, it depends on who the audience is, what their faith is. You can share, the audience is appropriate, and you can share sometimes things like that. And if you say something like that and they think you're crazy, or these devotees are crazy, they're taking drugs, obviously they're all in drugs, preaching to the faithless, it would be very inappropriate. So it depends on the audience. Prabhupada sometimes would share things, and sometimes he'd say it's none of your business. Depends who the audience, what the time, place, and audience circumstances. Obviously, the Bhagavatam is not exactly everyone just talking about, you know, what they ate for lunch. So there is a time for the devotees to share their realizations with each other. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the Bhagavatam. Yes.
Sometimes some devotees have amazing experiences which give them a lot of faith, but then some years later it seems that the very same devotees tend to lose even faith. So why would that happen if Krishna revealed himself to them in such a wonderful way?
Well, it's called, Prabhupada said in the beginning of 77, the difference between a big tree and a castor bush. For what seems to be a huge experience compared to actual reality is vastly different. Therefore, sometimes devotees may get some experience, just like Daksha, after he got his head cut off, and he took his next birth, he was also Prajapati, and he offered wonderful prayers to Lord Vishnu in order to become empowered to propagate again. Propagate. So Vishnu came riding in the back of Garuda with his eight arms, and Daksha was so ecstatic that he was filled with transcendental bliss. Perhaps he couldn't even remain standing. But then when he was asked what benediction he wanted, he asked for the power to have unlimited sex life. So that's the covering potency of Maya. Covers what? Even one comes to that platform, one is full of ecstatic ecstasy. So only at the platform of Prema Bhava, the real platform of Bhava, and Prema Bhakti, when one doesn't perceive material existence anymore, everything is seen spiritual, then one is fixed, actually fixed, completely fixed into pure devotional service. Before that, we can forget at any time. Bharat Maharaj forgot, and he was at the preliminary stage of Bhava. So what to speak of our poor selves? We can get covered over quite easily. For what we think is an amazing realization, maybe relatively insignificant. It's not even one ray in the sunlight. It's not even a fraction of the ray. But for us, in our present position, you know, it seems unbelievably extraordinary. It says that 100 times more happiness, the greatest happiness on the world, on this planet, is experienced by the Gandharvas. And 100 times what they're experiencing is experienced by the Charanas. And 100 times what they're experiencing is experienced by those on Indra Loka. And 100 times what their experience is experienced by Indra. 100 times of that is that which is experienced on Mahaloka. 100 times that experience is experienced on Jhana Loka. 100 times that is experienced on Brahma Loka. 100 times that is experienced in Brahman realization. And Brahman realization is one atomic fraction in the ocean of a drop of nectar in the ocean of transcendental devotional service. So, and we think we know everything. Anything else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for an inspiring lecture. When devotee read about hellish planets, which attitude we should have, because devotee is supposed to, if make some mistake, to be forgive. Krishna will forgive to us and nullify reaction, this and that. It's supposed to be not for us. It's supposed to be for people who don't.
Really?
Okay. Who don't are on the path. How we should
we should
see.
Become afraid. Well, at the same time, we should have some faith Krishna will protect us. But we shouldn't be so sure that we commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting. Because we our only guarantee is are strictly following pure devotional service. Even Prabhupada writes in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the DBC, he's appointed, the DBC is like Yamaraj. Yamaraj made a mistake and he got cursed. So if the GBC acts incorrectly, they may also get cursed and have to see Yamaraj. So we should have a little bit of fear, healthy fear, that keeps us strictly on the path of pure devotional service. That's why hell is there, to give us some fear. Not that, oh, I'm free. As Prabhupada said, that even if one performs devotional service, if he doesn't act properly, then he may come back and have an opportunity to perform devotional service his next life, even if he's low born. So we shouldn't be so confident that, you know, I have a ticket to the heavenly planets and that's the consolation prize. Oh, you have to, otherwise we'll never become serious. Even Yudhisthira Maharaja said he had to see hell for a very slight mistake. Anything else?
Yeah, I mean, open question would be, is it possible for me to see hellish planets?
If you want to.
I mean, for any mistake that I
did.
There's a
guided tour, yeah. You know.
Yeah. I mean, because of any mistake that I did in my life when
I don't think, you know,
devotee
depends.
And so
I don't know. I'm not Yamaraj. You'll have to contact him. Send him an email. See what he thinks. But even if we went to hell, it wouldn't be so bad. We get darshan with one of the Mahajans. We can talk about Krishna with him. Ask him some questions. I mean, otherwise, how many people get a darshan of a Mahajan nowadays?